This is Bill McKibben from 350.org, and you're listening to WGXE, that's 90.7 on your FM dial, ACRA, putting the community back in radio.
Hi, folks. I'm Ken Landon, owner of Crossroads Brewing Company here in Athens. On Thursday, September 8th at 7 p.m., we hope to bring some awareness to the fracking issue in New York State by hosting a free screening of Gasland by Josh Fox. The film will be followed by an informational question and answer session where we encourage all sides and viewpoints to join in the discussion. Greene County resident Roger Downs, legislative director of the Sierra Club Atlanta chapter, will be here to answer questions as well. All are welcome, and we hope to see everyone there.
You're listening to Living Lightly on the Land, an audio magazine of rural wisdom from your friends and neighbors at Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Living Lightly on the Land. I'm Liz Lo-Judas, your host from Cornell Cooperative Extension's Agroforestry Resource Center. In the wake of flooding from Hurricane Irene last week, it's ironic that this month's show was planned to be on watershed protection. Water is an abundant resource in our area, and it should be treasured and protected, but as we've seen, we need to respect its power. Although water gives life, it can also reap destruction. So in the aftermath of Irene, I decided to postpone my planned show so that I can do my work as an extension educator and share research-based information that I hope will be helpful for people recovering from the storm. I will be reading from fact sheets that have been compiled on our website, which is www.agroforestrycenter.org. These fact sheets are also available as handouts at the Agroforestry Resource Center, which is located on Route 23 in ACRA, and also at the Columbia County Cooperative Extension Office on Route 66 in Hudson, and at various locations, mostly on the mountaintop in Greene County. These fact sheets can also be mailed to you upon request, and you can request a mailing by calling us at 518-622-9820. So today I'm going to be sharing advice from New York State agencies as well as extension offices around the country on topics such as inspecting and disinfecting flooded wells and septic systems, remediating mold in flooded homes, and crop and food safety after floods, as well as safe chainsaw use for homeowners. Before I get started in sharing these resources, I just wanted to express that our hearts are with those who suffered from the flood. And I also want to express appreciation for everyone who is out there volunteering today on Labor Day in flood cleanup, as well as those who have donated money or supplies. And I'd also just like to give special recognition to Jay Fink and all the folks over at WRIP in Windham. 90.7 FM has been a lifeline and a communication center for the Northern Catskills during this crisis. And they're doing a fantastic job. And I know a few days when WGXC was offline on the FM dial, we were actually streaming some of the WRIP broadcast on our website. So I'd like to start out with a song. And this song goes out to everybody who's been impacted by the storm, and the song, I intend it to express the solidarity that all of us feel with our neighbors as they start to clean up after this hurricane. And the song is You Never Walk Alone, and this one is sung by Johnny Cash.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm is a golden sky and the sweet silver song of the lark. Walk on through the wind, walk on through the rain, though your dreams be tossed and blown. Walk on, walk on, with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone. You'll never walk alone.
That was Johnny Cash singing You Never Walk Alone. And we're back on WGXC with a special flood recovery edition of Living Lightly on the Land. I'm Liz Lojudis, Cooperative Extension Educator, providing you with research-tested information on safety in the aftermath of flooding. Cornell Cooperative Extension of Greene County has nearly 20 fact sheets on different flood-related topics on our website, www.agroforestrycenter.org, that are available for folks to go take a look at. And some of the topics that we have up right now are cleaning and disinfecting your home after a flood, drying out the house, cleaning your flooded or water-damaged home, mold removal guidelines for your flooded home. We have restoring water wells, as well as what to do after a flood in terms of inspecting your septic system, food safety after a flood, what to do if your garden has been flooded, food safety advice to commercial growers regarding flooded crops, flood and storm damaged crops, and handling flood damaged crops. We also have some guidelines for woodland owners and maple producers in response to Hurricane Irene, as well as chainsaw safety for homeowners, guidelines for handling water-damaged electrical equipment, and finally, because I think a lot of us are pretty shooken up by the events of the past week, we have some fact sheets on dealing emotionally with natural disasters, one in particular called A Flood of Emotions. I'm going to start today by sharing information about how you can protect the water quality in your home after a flood. And I want to just mention that it is a good idea to have your well water tested for total coliform bacteria once a year. And it might be a good idea for people who are impacted by flooding to have their water tested, even if their wells were not underwater during the recent storms. And at the end of this segment, I will give contact information for certified water testing labs so that you can give them a call if you feel that it's necessary for your home water supply and your home water safety. So we're going to start with information from the New York State Department of Health on inspecting wells after a flood. I do hope that everyone that's listening here has conducted some type of inspection of their well already, but in case there are people who are unsure of how to proceed, I'll share this information with you. Rural householders should be aware that the safety of their well water may have been compromised by recent flooding from Hurricane Irene. And families who rely on wells for their drinking and cooking needs should inspect their wells and consider having their water tested. The New York State Department of Health has issued protocols for assessing contamination and disinfecting wells after a flood. If you believe that your well may have been contaminated, do not use that water for drinking and cooking purposes. Use only disinfected or bottled water until the safety of your water has been determined. If you believe that your well may be contaminated by petroleum or other chemicals, do not use your well for any purpose and immediately contact the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation's spill hotline at 1-800-457-7362. The first step in assessing damage to a well is to inspect the area where the well is located to observe for signs that the area has been flooded. If you did not see the area during the flood, look for clues such as mud, debris, or standing water near the wellhead. People inspecting the area where the well is located should be cautious of potential dangers such as unstable ground that has been undermined by water and exposed electrical wiring from the well pump. Homeowners should be aware that the potential for contamination of the well does exist even if the wellhead was not submerged by floodwaters. If soil near the wellhead has eroded, this may create a pathway for surface water to travel to the groundwater that feeds the well, so special attention should be paid to any eroded soil. If soil erosion around the well is extensive, the ground may need to be regraded to direct all the surface water away from the well casing. The homeowner should also inspect the electrical wires, well casing, and well cap for damage. The well cap should be seated firmly on the well casing and sealed tightly to prevent sediment and debris from entering the well. If mud or debris is present, the area around the well should be cleared and the well casing, cap, and other accessible components should be thoroughly cleaned. Be sure the electricity is off before you clean any electrical components. After the damage to the well has been assessed, the homeowner should decide if they require assistance of a professional to restore the well. Floodwater carries large debris that can dislodge parts of the well and has the potential to crack the well casing. If these conditions are observed, consult a professional for repair of the system. If excessive mud, silt, or sediment has entered the well, the pump may need to be removed before any cleaning can take place if you have a submersible pump in your well. If the pump's control box was submerged during the flood, its electrical components should be clean and dry before electrical service is restored. Unless the homeowner has ample experience in working with submersible pumps, the assistance of a professional is advised before removing the pump. After the well has been inspected and cleaned, the well should be pumped until the water runs clear. Use an outside spigot and hose to direct the water into nearby drainage rather than into your septic system or public sewer. Any water well that has been flooded should be disinfected before using for washing, drinking, or cooking. The New York State Department of Health suggests three methods for disinfecting water for home use. Disinfection by boiling produces the safest water. Simply bring the water to a rolling boil and keep it at full boil for at least 1 minute to eliminate bacterial contamination. After the water is boiled, let it cool before using. Boiled water will taste better if you restore oxygen content by pouring the water back and forth between two containers. The second recommended disinfection method is to add a small amount of liquid chlorine bleach containing 4 to 6% available chlorine to the water. Add a minimum of 8 drops of bleach per gallon of water. If the water appears cloudy, up to 16 drops of bleach can be added per gallon. After the chlorine bleach has been added to the water, stir and let sit for 30 minutes. If the water does not taste or smell of chlorine at that point, add another dose of bleach and let the water sit for an additional 15 minutes. The third recommended method is to add commercially available iodine or chlorine tablets to the water, and the package directions on the tablets should be followed closely. So if you've taken precautions for your drinking water, the next step would be to actually sanitize your water system. And to sanitize a well, the New York State Department of Health recommends the following procedure. Attach a hose to the outdoor faucet that is closest to the well. Run water through the hose until it is clear. Mix 2 quarts of household bleach containing around 5% chlorine in 10 gallons of water in a large bucket or pail. Turn off the electrical power to the water pump, Carefully remove the well cap and place the hose inside of the well casing. Restore electrical power and turn the hose spigot on to run the pump. Carefully pour the bleach mixture down into the well casing. At the same time, continue to run the water from the hose inside the well casing to circulate the chlorine bleach mixture, using the hose to wash down the interior of the well casing. Next, run the water at each outdoor and indoor faucet until a chlorine odor is present. After detecting a chlorine odor, turn each faucet off. Circulate water through the hose for 1 hour, having it going down into your well, and then turn off all running water and disconnect electricity to the pump. Remove the hose from the well and pour a second mixture of 2 quarts bleach in 10 gallons of water down the well pump. Disinfect the well cap and seal by rinsing in the chlorine solution. Replace the well seal and cap and allow the well to stand idle without running the water in the home for a minimum of 8 hours and preferably 12 to 24 hours. After allowing the system to disinfect for the recommended period of time, flush the chlorinated water out of the well. Turn on the pump and run the water through a garden hose in an area away from grass, gardens, and shrubbery until the odor of chlorine has dissipated. Run all indoor and outdoor faucets until the odor and taste of chlorine disappears, being careful not to flood your septic system with chlorinated water. And I know those are pretty detailed instructions, and again, they can be found on our website, and also they should be published at some point during this week in the Catskill Daily Mail and the Hudson Register Star. We sent out a press release today. So after the chlorine has been cleared from the system, wait approximately a week and then submit a water sample to a certified water testing laboratory for total coliform bacteria test. Until the test shows that your well is free of contamination, continue to use bottled or disinfected water for drinking and food preparation. And after your well water has been proven safe for home use, you may wish to consider retesting the well water again after several weeks to assure that it has not been recontaminated. If you have additional questions about testing well water, you may wish to attend the What's in Your Water, a Primer on Wells and Septic Systems program at Cornell Cooperative Extension's Agroforestry Resource Center on Monday, September 12th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. The featured speakers are Ed Van Nordstrom from Columbia County Health Department and Teresa Mayhew from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia County. So I'm going to read some of the certified water testing laboratories that are in our area. There are certainly more certified water testing laboratories in New York State, and the New York State Department of Health does have a comprehensive list, a searchable list on their website. But here are a few to get you started if you are interested in calling them and requesting a water sample kit to be sent to you. In Greene County, we do have a local certified water testing lab, and that's Myers Lab, which is on Main Street in Hunter. And the phone number there is 263-4333. In Albany County, we have St. Peter's Bender's Laboratory, and their number is 525-5480. And I also just want to mention that at the Agroforestry Resource Center, we do have water testing kits available from Bender Lab, and you can pick them up from us, and then you send the water test or bring the water test up to Albany and pay Bender Lab directly for the test. Most of these total coliform tests, to my knowledge, they don't cost more than $50. They're under $50. Another Albany-based certified water testing laboratory is Albany Adirondack Environmental Services, and that number is 434-4546. There's also Ulster Environmental Lab Works, which is located in Marlborough, and that number is 845-236-7823. And Gentech Environmental Services, which is located in Stone Ridge, and that number is 845-687-0420. I just want to give a little bit of information on what to do in regards to your septic system after a flood. Most of this information is really common sense, but I will go through it briefly. This information comes from the University of Arkansas's Cooperative Extension Service. If your septic tank and leach field is currently flooded, certainly do not try to address the system or to pump the tank during flooded conditions. Also, do not drink the well water until the water has gone down around your septic system and you've had a chance to assess damage. Do not use the sewage system until the water in the absorption field is lower than the water level around the house. Once the flood has receded, your very best bet is to have your septic tank professionally inspected and serviced if you suspect any damage at all. And signs of damage include settling or an inability to accept water. So there might be sewage or gray water backing up into your basement. Flooding does not damage most septic tanks since they are below ground. However, septic tanks and pump chambers can fill with silt and debris and must be professionally cleaned. So call a professional to pump the septic system as soon as possible after the flood. Being cautious about accessing the leach field or driving on it and compacting the soil, because saturated soil is especially susceptible to compaction. The professional should examine all electrical connections for damage, and certainly you and the professional can take a look at the area around the septic tank as well as the leach field to make sure that the access cover is secure to the tank and there's not been any blockage or damage to the ports, and that the vegetation over your soil absorption field and septic tank is intact. And if any erosion damage needs to be repaired, you can sod or reseed areas as necessary. If sewage has backed up into your basement, obviously clean the area and disinfect the floor. You can use a chlorine solution of a half cup of chlorine bleach to each gallon of water to thoroughly disinfect the area. And the only way to prevent water backing up into, or sewage backing up into your basement when the water table is high and you're threatened by flooding is to relieve pressure on the system by using it less. When you do clean up any flood water that or sewage that may be in your house, try not to dump flood water into your septic system. Try to let waters recede and not overwhelm your septic system. So on that happy note, I hope nobody out there actually has a flooded septic system that they're dealing with today. We're going to play another song. And that was Aretha Franklin's version of Bridge Over Troubled Water. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, and this is Liz Lo Judas with Living Lightly on the Land. Today is our special flood recovery edition of the show. And we're going to turn now to some fact sheets on how to deal with cleanup after a flood of your home. Most people who have experienced flooding have probably completed the initial cleanup, so most of our attention will be paid to fact sheets on mold remediation, since mold can be a persistent problem in homes that have been saturated. And the following information has been compiled from several fact sheets created by Cornell Cooperative Extension and the Louisiana State University Extension Service. Residents whose homes have been flooded should start cleanup by assessing and securing the safety of the building before entering. Once the home is deemed safe, the next step is to prioritize tasks, starting with the removal of standing water and mud. If a basement is full or nearly full of water, the water should be removed slowly, pumping out just 2 to 3 feet of water a day to prevent collapsing walls. Mud should be removed using shovels or other mechanical means, and people should be sure to wear gloves and minimize skin contact with mud that may be contaminated from the flooding. And I know that in Catskill and on the mountaintop that people are moving a lot of mud these days, and it's pretty hard to keep the mud from getting all over you, but so try to wear protective equipment to help protect yourself from any contamination. Remaining mud can be sprayed with a hose to remove it from hard surfaces. And don't forget to check your heating ducts. Disconnect the heating ducts from the furnace and spray the ducts clean with a garden hose. Once the water and mud has been removed, clean surfaces that were flooded with hot water and a heavy-duty cleaner. Start cleaning the walls at the bottom where the damage is worst and work your way up. And you can disinfect after cleaning with a solution of 1/4 cup chlorine bleach per gallon of water. After the contaminated areas have been disinfected, removing saturated items. The use of fans and dehumidifiers can be very helpful in drying out wet buildings. And thankfully, last week we had a lot of sun to help with getting things dried out. Flood-soaked wallboards and insulation should be removed, and the wood framing should be allowed to dry completely before new construction takes place. If hardwood floors have been submerged, remove a floorboard every few feet to reduce buckling that is caused by swelling. To prevent the growth of mold and mildew, furniture, rugs, bedding, and clothing that have gotten wet should be removed from the home and assessed for safety. Carpeting that was submerged for 24 hours or more should be discarded immediately. Molds are a type of fungi that help to break down dead materials. Molds produce tiny cells called spores that can spread easily. Spores form new mold growth on moist surfaces, so controlling moisture will help to halt the spread of mold. Long-term or heavy exposure to mold can trigger allergic reactions and asthma attacks, may lower immune response, or have other negative effects on health, especially for young children, the elderly, and those who are already suffering from illness. Mold begins to grow on materials that remain wet for longer than 2 or 3 days. The longer the mold grows, the greater the health hazard and the harder it is to control. Because of the hazard presented by mold, cleanup should begin immediately. Homeowners and renters should thoroughly document the damage to their home by taking photographs that can be shared with insurance companies and then begin cleanup procedures. Mold testing in a home is usually not needed, but may be required by some insurance companies. If mold is growing in your home, do-it-yourself cleanup is possible if strict guidelines are followed. All people participating in the cleanup should wear protective gear, including gloves, goggles, and a respirator rated N95 or higher. A properly fitted half-face or full-face respirator with filter cartridges provides greater protection than dust mask-type respirators. The work area should be sealed off from the rest of the house and ventilated well to prevent the spread of mold. Open windows and use window fans to direct air outdoors. Do not run central air systems during cleanup. Remove all moldy, porous materials and seal in plastic bags. It is best to discard all flooded carpeting, upholstery, fabrics, and mattresses, but if an item is particularly valuable, it should be cleaned, disinfected, and dried outside of the home as quickly as possible and inspected closely to determine if it can be salvaged. So mold can really get into porous materials like drywall, for example, or insulation, but surface mold can be effectively cleaned from non-porous materials such as hard plastic, concrete, glass, and metal, as well as solid wood. Cleaning should completely remove, not just kill the mold, as dead mold spores can create health problems. Wash dirty or moldy materials with non-phosphate all-purpose cleaners because phosphate residue is food for mold. Use a HEPA-filtered vacuum to remove dust, mold, and mildew. And after you have removed wet or saturated items and completed cleanup, remain alert for the growth of mold and repeat cleanup procedures until the mold has been eradicated from the home. If you choose to hire a contractor to remove the mold, seek a licensed mold remediation contractor with special training and equipment. Get the methods of remediation and cost in a written estimate and compare the procedures with cleanup procedures available from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in a document called Mold Remediation in Schools and Commercial Buildings. And that document is available online at www.epa.gov/mold. And again, this is a compilation of fact sheets on flood cleanup and mold remediation, and you can access all of them at www.agroforestrycenter.org, or you can give us a call at 518-622-9820, and we'll send these out to you, these fact sheets, or you can stop by our offices and pick them up in person. And we're going to play another song now. We're going to play You Got a Friend by Carole King.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. See you again. see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you have to do is call, and I'll be there, yes I will. You've got a friend.
And that was Carol King singing You've Got a Friend. You're listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. I'm your host, Liz Lo-Judas, and today is a special flood recovery program in which I'm sharing field-tested research from cooperative extensions around the country on safe flood cleanup procedures. I did want to mention a couple of phone numbers. If you have specific questions that you need help with, you can call Cornell Cooperative Extension in Greene and Columbia counties. The Greene County number is 518-622-9820, and the Columbia County number is 518-828-3346. And we can help you find answers to your questions. If we don't know them, we can find the resources for you to answer your questions. You may also be interested in contacting the health departments in the two counties. In Greene County, the Greene County Public Health Nursing Service is our Department of Health, and that number is 518-719-3600. And then you can contact the Columbia County Department of Health at 828-5894. So I'm happy to be sharing some resources with everyone today. I hope that these are helpful. And you can access them by calling the numbers that I gave you for Cornell Cooperative Extension, or you can visit the website www.agroforestrycenter.org to access about 20 fact sheets on different flood recovery efforts. So we're going to spend a little bit of time now on food safety after flooding. We're going to focus on two topics with food safety, one being what to do if the food in your household was actually flooded, and the other being what to do and what to be aware of if your garden was flooded, or if you're a commercial grower that grows vegetables, what you should be aware of if your crops were flooded. The information on food safety after a flood in a household for household use comes to us from the University of Vermont Cooperative Extension. And flood water should generally be considered as being contaminated, as it is difficult to determine what it has contacted on its way to your property. Water from floods can be contaminated with sewage or animal waste. Raw sewage and animal waste contains bacteria that can cause illness if contaminated foods are eaten. Floodwaters that cover roads, vehicles, solid waste facilities, or pass by manufacturing and business sites can carry heavy metals and other industrial contaminants, which can also be hazardous to human health. So if you are not sure if food was directly exposed to floodwaters, if you're not sure if the food is safe for consumption, it is safer to throw out the food. So if in doubt, throw it out. Any of the following food items, if they were exposed, even possibly exposed or splashed with floodwaters, should not be consumed and should be thrown out. And those items include food items in your refrigerator and freezer, including raw fruits and vegetables, meat, poultry, fish, eggs, and cartons of milk. Food in boxes, paper, foil, or cloth containers, including cereal, juice, or powdered milk. Spices, seasonings, and extracts. all home canned food, since the area under the seal of the jars and bottles cannot be properly disinfected. Any food and drinks in containers with screw caps, pull tops, and crimped caps, including mayonnaise and salad dressing, opened containers and packages, and flour, grain, sugar, coffee, and other staples in canisters. All undamaged commercially prepared foods in metal cans and retort pouches, which are flexible, shelf-stable juice or seafood pouches, must be thoroughly washed and disinfected. So throw out any damaged cans, including those with large, dense leaks, swelling, punctures, fractures, or extensive deep rusting. And I would think you'd do that even if they hadn't been flooded, but throw out any damaged cans. And any undamaged cans should be washed as follows. Remove the labels, since they can harbor dirt and bacteria beneath them. Brush or wipe away any dirt or silt. Thoroughly wash the cans with soap and water using hot water. And then rinse them with water that is safe for drinking. Sanitize the cans in immersion in one of the two following ways. Either place in water and allow the water to come to a boil and continue boiling for 2 minutes, or place a freshly made solution consisting of 1 tablespoon of liquid chlorine bleach per gallon of drinking water for 15 minutes. Air dry the cans for a minimum of 1 hour before opening or storing. And any concentrated baby formula in reconditioned all metal containers must be diluted with clean drinking water. And then if you had cooking utensils, pans, and kitchen countertops exposed to flood water, thoroughly wash metal pans, ceramic dishes, and utensils, including can openers, with soap and water using hot water, and sanitize them in the way that I mentioned above by immersing them in the bleach solution for 15 minutes or boiling them for at least 2 minutes. Discard wooden and plastic utensils, baby nipples, pacifiers, and any other porous non-food item that are used with food. And thoroughly wash your countertops with soap and water, and then rinse and sanitize by applying a solution of 1 tablespoon liquid chlorine bleach per gallon of drinking water and allow to air dry. Now, this next document is also coming to us from the University of Vermont Extension Center for Sustainable Agriculture, produced this particular document. And this is food safety advice to commercial growers regarding flooded crops. But I think that this is common sense advice that should be taken into account by home gardeners as well. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration considers crops where the edible portion has come in contact with floodwaters to be adulterated and not to be sold for human consumption or not to be consumed from your garden. There is no practical method of reconditioning the edible portion of a crop that will provide a reasonable assurance of human food safety. So fresh fruits and vegetables that have been inundated by floodwaters cannot be adequately cleaned and should be destroyed. Advice for flooded crops. As per FDA, discard all crops that have edible portions that have come in contact with flood water. And although root crops are usually cooked and often peeled before consumption, if under floodwaters, they may be considered to be grown in unsanitary conditions. Common sense suggests that intact, undamaged crops that are to be peeled and cooked, such as winter squash, can be consumed but after they were flooded, but only if the flooding was for a short period of time, several hours at most, and the crop was properly harvested and is thoroughly washed and then treated with a high rate of sanitizer, such as chlorine. Crops near flooded areas or those that were flooded without the edible part of the plant coming in contact with floodwater, such as sweet corn or staked tomatoes, need to be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. And your decision whether to sell or consume them should be based on the following. Is the edible part of the plant developing, and if so, how far above the floodwater was it? If there is any evidence that the floodwater splashed up onto the edible portion of the crop, they should not be eaten. If feeding to livestock, was the crop exposed to prolonged periods of moisture and stress that could promote fungal growth or molds that could produce toxins for the livestock? And avoid feeding crops that came into contact with floodwater to livestock, as the plants could have pesticides, pathogens, or other contaminants that could be harmful to livestock. And then finally, other considerations are to allow at least 60 days to elapse between flooding and planting of the next human food crop. In absence of known or suspected biological or chemical contaminants in floodwaters, you can replant after 60 days. But soils should be allowed to dry sufficiently and then to be tilled at least 6 inches deep before planting the crops. That is some advice on food crops for humans. And on our website or at your request, we also have advice for what to do if you had forage for livestock that was impacted by flooding. And we're going to listen to another song.
Love.
You're listening to Living Lightly on the Land on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Lislo Judas, an educator with Cornell Cooperative Extension's Agroforestry Resource Center. And today's a special edition of our show in which we're sharing flood recovery advice that is coming from state departments and extension associations from around the country. And we're going to spend just a little bit of time talking about flood cleanup safety for homeowners and woodland owners, as well as maple producers. If you're a woodland owner, one of the first safety things that, or if you're a hiker, actually, everyone needs to be aware, if you go into the woods at all, that for the next several weeks, treetops and branches that may have been broken but not fallen will eventually fall from the upper canopy. So all of us who go in the woods really need to be aware that those trees that we that have been broken, the branches that we call widowmakers, may be falling more frequently after the heavy winds and rain from the storm that we had last week. Woodland owners and maple producers should seek assistance from trained professionals about their woods and how they're going to respond to damage that may have been caused by the hurricane. And it's important to remember that while impacts of the storm can be visually dramatic, other than potential safety or priority access issues, there are few, if any, woodland and sugarbush situations that require immediate action. So owners and maple producers should review their management plan and work with their forester to inspect the extent of the damage and discuss the actions that are appropriate for the property. And they should be landowners should be wary of anyone offering their services to immediately solve some problem or and should not make hasty and ill-informed decisions about cleanup of their forest land. I just want to spend a moment on chainsaw safety for the homeowner. And I guess I'm going to point out the obvious, but if you're not familiar with using a chainsaw, it's definitely best that you find someone with familiarity in using a chainsaw and all the required safety equipment to help you to do the job for you. You should be very, very well aware of how to use your chainsaw. You should have read, studied, and digested the operator's manual to ensure that your chainsaw is adjusted properly and is being used according to the manufacturer's specifications. You should fuel your chainsaw in an open area at least 10 feet from an ignition source, and start your chainsaw at least 10 feet from the fuel container. You should start your chainsaw on level ground or an area where you are firmly supported and you have your firm footing. And if the chainsaw has a chain brake, make sure it's on when starting the chainsaw. Keep both hands on the chainsaw and keep secure footing at all time. Clear the area that you're working on of any loose debris and obstacles that could get in the way of cutting and retreating from falling or moving branches. Avoid cutting over your head. Be sure to stay clear of electrical power lines. Shut off your chainsaw or release the throttle prior to retreating from the area where you're cutting. Shut off your chainsaw or engage the chain brake if the terrain is hazardous. And use personal protective equipment, which includes a hard hat, eye, face protection, hearing protection, gloves, and chaps, as well as foot protection. If you would like more information on chainsaw safety for homeowners, you can contact Cornell Cooperative Extension of Greene County at 518-622-9820. And I just wanted to close with some information about the emotional difficulties that people experience after natural disasters. And really, there are fact sheets available on our website about this, but in a nutshell, it's really important that we keep talking to each other and that we keep supporting each other. And I think that we're witnessing a lot of that going on in the areas that were hardest hit, where neighbors are helping neighbors, and we are keeping ourselves going with the help of friends. So I hope that this information was helpful to some people today, and I'm looking forward to being back next month on October 3rd. And that particular edition will be on watershed protection in Greene and Columbia counties. So thanks for listening, and we'll go out with Touch of Gray by the Grateful Dead.